Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
I can have my paralegal approach with 177 and 176. Do you recognize those two exhibits as the cell phone records, affidavits authenticating them, thumb drive of all the records, subscriber information for those two phone numbers, the 808-755-5452 and the 480-489-4652 associated to Lori Vallow?
Yes. Yes.
The state will move to admit 177 and 176.
No objection.
179, 176?
176 and 177.
Oh, I'm sorry. 176, 177 are admitted.
We've heard of the number 480-351-9. Did you learn that that number was associated to Alexander Cox?
Yes.
Was that number associated to him through, for instance, the Chandler Police Department from the July incident?
Yes.
If I can have my paralegal approach with 179. Does that contain an affidavit authenticating them, a thumb drive of the records, a print off showing the subscriber or that phone, as well as a print off of the call detail records for September 27th through October 10th?
Yes.
Let me just want to double check one thing. Yes.
Is that Corrido 351-9120 number, the number that we heard was making the appointment and responsible for scheduling the tinting with Dan's window tinting in Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes.
State will move to admit 179.
Any objection?
The same foundational objection of Crawford, Your Honor.
179 is admitted.
Detective, did you look at the call detail records for 480-489? The call, the phone number associated to Lori Vallo and the 480-351. The number associated to Alex Cox for October 2nd of 2019?
Yes, I did.
This is Exhibit 179. On these records, 179 being the records associated to Alex Cox, did you note phone call to the called number 480-489-4652?
Yes.
And that's the number associated with Lori Vallo?
That is her number, yes. Associated with her, yes.
Now we see here for time, on October 2nd, a 9:02 a.m., correct?
Yes.
We see GMT minus 6. I'm going to pull in closer for this. Correct?
Yes.
Is that 9:02 a.m. Idaho time?
Yes.
For Arizona time, is it GMT minus 7?
Yes.
So Arizona time, would that be 8:02 a.m.?
That would be correct, yes.
So on October 2nd at 8:02 a.m. Arizona time, this phone called Lori Vallo's phone?
Yes.
So Alex Cox's phone called Lori Vallo's phone?
That is correct.
Do the call detail records for Lori Vallo's phone show that same interaction between the two cell phones?
Yes, it does.
And so those were also contained in that exhibit?
Yes.
So this would have been approximately 30 minutes or 35 minutes after Brandon left his home. There's a call between Alex Cox's cell phone and Lori Vallo's cell phone. In Rexburg, Idaho?
In Rexburg, Idaho, yes. Approximately 35 minutes after Mr. Boudreau left his residence in Gilbert.
And did that phone call last about 24 minutes?
Yes.
In that search warrant, did you also obtain phone records for a 480-321-98? A phone number associated to Melanie Boudreau?
Yes.
And was that associated via Brandon Boudreau had provided that?
Yes, that was her known number.
Is that also the number you had seen when you extracted Brandon's cell phone number as a contact for Melanie?
Yes.
While you were conducting this investigation, did you also obtain a search warrant for other phone numbers associated with Lori Vallow for 480 692-9612?
Yes.
And then during your, was that search warrant executed on December 28th for that phone number?
Yes, it was.
As you went into 2020, were you advised by the FBI that they had executed a search warrant and located a track phone that was used during the time frame of the shooting in the area of the shooting in Gilbert, Arizona, meaning a track phone used in the area of that October 2nd, 2019 shooting on Phelps?
Yes.
On February 21st, did you author a search warrant to obtain the cell phone records or track phone 304-960-5998?
Yes.
Who did you believe at that time in your based upon your investigation, was using that phone?
That track phone, based on the information I had at the time and the data, belonged to Alexander Cox.
Sure. Now, the track phone of 304-960-5998, did that have a subscriber to Alex Cox?
It was subscribed to a Gmail account.
Okay. When you executed the search warrant to obtain those records, did you obtain an affidavit from TrackPhone authenticating those, as well as a thumb drive of the cell phone records themselves?
Yes.
I can have my paralegal approach with Exhibit 180. Inside that exhibit, if you can just verify, did the track phone provide a print off showing the track phone was purchased from a Walmart store, 5494? And it should be its own piece of paper.
Yes, I have. I'm looking at it right now in here. But yes, I am familiar with this as well.
Does that exhibit contain a print-off showing that the track phone was purchased on September 25th of 2019 at a Walmart superstore in Idaho Falls, Idaho, store number 5494?
Yes.
And does it show the activation date of September 26th of 2019?
Yes.
And does that also contain a print-off of all of the call detail records for that track phone number 304-960-5998?
Yes, it does.
State will move to admit 180.
Foundation.
All right, 180 is admitted.
When you looked at the call detail records, did they reflect that this phone was used from September 26th, when it was activated, until only October 2nd?
That is correct.
After October 2nd, was there any other phone calls made or received by this phone?
No, that phone was no longer seen or activated after that date.
Is this the phone number we're talking about, the 304-960-5998?
Yes.
When you looked through these call detail records, is there only one number that ever calls this tracked phone?
Yes.
Is that phone number the only number that ever calls it, 515-402-0143?
That is correct.
Is that the number that we previously heard Detective Nate Duncan testify as being associated to Chad Daybell?
That is correct, yes.
Looking at these call detail records, does this track phone, the 304 number, call only one number itself?
Yes.
And is that number that is called by this track phone the 515-402-0143 number associated with Chad Daybell?
Yes.
So every call on this is either made by Chad Bell to this or to Chad Daybell?
That is correct.
And the call detail records, do they reflect that 515-402-0143 number associated as Chad Daybell calling and receiving calls from this leading up to the shooting of Brandon Boudreau as well as immediately after it?
Yes, prior to the shooting and shortly after the shooting, yes.
When you obtained these records as well as the all these other cell phone records, did you reach out to the FBI?
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Because the FBI has resources for cell phone data analysis and tracking purposes, and we recognized at this juncture that we could use their assistance.
And what did you ask them to do with this information?
So with this information, I was able to get in contact with a cellular analysis specialist with the FBI to provide them the data that I received for my warrant requests and then the responses I received from those companies. And they were able, the FBI was then able to assist with tracking locations of the devices during these particular time frames where we know individuals were communicating with each other.
Did you ask the FBI to look at this track phone, the 304 number that was purchased at the Walmart in Idaho Falls and activated on September 26th?
Yes.
Did you ask the FBI to look at the phone number associated to Lori Vallow, the 480-489 number?
Yes.
And did you ask the FBI to look at Alex Cox's phone, the 480-351 number?
Yes.
And to map those around the time leading up to and after the shooting of Brandon Boudreau?
Yes, I wanted to know what the phone activity was and location was for Lori Vallow, Alexander Cox, and then the other phone believed to be used by Alexander Cox.
Did you also provide the FBI cellular analyst with that Gmail data that was obtained via search warrants?
Yes.
For the HomerJMaximus@gmail.com associated to Alexander Cox?
Yes.
I have no other questions for this witness.
All right, cross-examination.
Thank you.
Detective Piller, you're the case agent on this case, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And how many times have you been the case agent before this case on October 2nd, 2019?
As a detective case agent?
Correct.
I couldn't give you a specific number. I'd have to guess.
Okay, how about a guess?
I would give roughly a couple hundred, maybe more.
Okay. So you've been the case agent on a couple hundred cases?
Yes, on investigations both in the Special Victims Unit and within our Violent Crimes Unit.
And is it the responsibility of a case agent to know pretty much everything about their case?
We do the best we can, yes.
Is it your responsibility as the case agent to review all the reports done by the officers and lab techs?
Yes.
Is it your responsibility to question the findings that are done by your officers?
By the fellow detectives, yes. By the officers themselves, if I have some speculation or questions about the initial reports from responding officers, I might set up a meeting to talk with them. But as detectives, we're all within the same facility, so I usually can just talk with them about any questions I might have or requests I might have.
Okay. And what color did Mr. Boudreaux say the Jeep was when he was with Officer Marianne Robb?
When he was with Officer Robb, he described it as a green-colored Jeep.
And what was the color of the Jeep that was seen by witnesses in the neighborhood?
It was referred to as different colors. What I surmised it to be was a darker-colored Jeep Wrangler.
So did you hear dark blue?
I do not remember specifically hearing dark blue, but I know that color has been brought up.
And is it your understanding that the color that Brandon pulled up on his phone to show the officers was camo green? Is that correct?
That's what was discussed by Officer Robb, but I was not privy to that actual conversation, and there was no supplement that I saw that indicated that.
So as the case agent, you did not watch the body cam with Officer Robb?
I watched all body worn camera from this case.
And so in the body cam, you did not see him actually show it to Officer Robb and Officer Bullock that were standing there?
Not that I recall, but again, I watched many hours of body worn camera footage, but I do not recall that specifically. No, I do not.
Would you like to see it to refresh your recollection?
If we want to take the time to watch that. But I'm also not disagreeing that it very well may have been said or shown to be a camo green.
So when is the first time you wrote in all of your reports that it was a gray Jeep? So where did you glean that information that the Jeep was gray?
The gray Jeep came about from my contact with the Chandler Police Department on October 9th.
So Brandon never told you it was a gray Jeep, is that correct?
I do not recall him ever describing it in the initial context as a gray Jeep, no.
And none of the neighbors ever called it a gray Jeep also, is that correct?
Not to me, no.
Okay. According to the police report, it stated that they found glass in the road, but only one piece was photographed. Is that correct?
From the photos I've seen, yes.
And then was that piece of glass that was found, one little piece, tested to see if it was actually glass from the window?
No.
And so did you just assume it was from the window?
With the time frame from the initial call for service to officer arrival and the consistency with the other shards of glass, I believed it to be related.
But you don't know that for sure at all. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Also, in the body cam, in about 7 or 8 seconds in, Brandon is seen moving glass with his feet and then walked out to the street with Officer Robb and Officer Bullock. So is it possible that he transported that piece of glass with his shoe?
Possible.
Just speculation.
Okay. The answer will stand.
And were you present at the time when they did the comb of the neighborhood?
The line?
Yes.
The line search, yes, I was present.
And how many people were in that line search?
Approximately 11, and they were all with the Criminal Investigations Division. It was all detectives, not patrol officers at that time.
And did you participate in that, in the line?
I did.
Okay. And was anything found in the line?
Through that line search, no. We did not find any viable evidence, usable evidence that we believe were associated with the case.
And what were you actually looking for?
Quite honestly, anything. Whether it be fragments of a bullet, which was the primary focus, glass shards that could be consistent with the damage to the vehicle. At this point in the initial investigation, this was our last act of searching the neighborhood. And this was, again, after the scene investigation, the canvassing, the interviews. This was just one last walk around the neighborhood to see if we could identify anything.
About how long did that take, that line search?
Approximately 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay. And you had mentioned, or someone had mentioned before, about the metal detector. Was that part of that walk or something separate?
Yes, that was both part of the walk and the investigation at the 3875 East Phelps address, within the glass, within the landscaping, around the vehicle.
And who had that metal detector? Do you know which officer had that, that they were searching?
I couldn't say specifically who, but I know it was used.
And the neighbors that were I know that Officer Robb had testified about talking to the neighbor, Samantha. Did you follow up with any of the neighbors yourself?
I did not follow up with any of the neighbors myself. Those tasks were delegated to fellow detectives in the days and weeks to follow.
And then, but they report to you, right? Is that correct?
If there's something that is helpful, yes. Many times if they go there, they'll simply say, hey, I've knocked on X amount of doors and wasn't able to make contact with residents. Or if they have no findings, they'll simply just let me know I didn't find anything.
So anything helpful to go along with already what you thought had happened, though, is that correct?
Anything to say one way or the other. I mean, as detectives, we have to be neutral fact finders. We're not choosing one way or the other. We are following the evidence. In this case, with the evidence we had at that point, we were following our best leads.
And so did you learn from Officer Robb that the neighbor that she had got contact with said that the Jeep had a tire on the back?
Can I object to hearsay?
Sustained.
Your Honor, I wasn't asking for the truth of the matter asserted. I was asking for the effect on the listener. Officer Robb.
Sustained.
Can I have a sidebar?
No, it's sustained. Next question.
In your estimation, Detective Hiller, how far was the Jeep when the supposed shot was taken?
With the information provided by Mr. Boudreau and the neighbors describing where this Jeep was located, where I believe, at least at the time, where that glass shard might be related in the roadway, I would guess, I don't want to guess because we didn't measure, and I don't know exactly where the individual was in the Jeep. What I can say is it was within a few feet. And when I say a few feet, I'm going to say 10 to 20 feet of a moving vehicle approaching where the projectile hit the Tesla.
Okay, and why were no measurements taken?
We didn't know exactly where that Jeep was located. We had an idea of where it was parked, but we didn't have an exact location for that Jeep, a specific spot.
If it was parked nose to nose with that white van, you kind of know exactly where it was parked.
We have a good idea of where it was at, absolutely.
But no measurements were taken?
No measurements, no ma'am.
And what measures were taken to decide the trajectory?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay, did the Gilbert Police Department ever decide on what the trajectory actually was?
No.
So were there tests done to find the trajectory?
No, because again, we don't have the exact placement, the height, the angle in which the projectile came from. And we can't determine that with just the hole in the Tesla that was since moved prior to police arrival.
Okay, so you know how, you can find out how tall the Jeep was, right?
No.
You cannot?
No.
And you don't know how tall the Tesla was?
The Tesla we could figure out at the time, but we did not measure the Tesla.
So no trajectory was ever really determined. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the hole in the car in the Tesla was approximately 1 inch wide and 2 inches long. Is that correct?
From the sticker, the letter A sticker, yes.
Correct.
That was like a 2 inch, I believe. Based on that, yes, I would say that hole was approximate size of 2 inches, but that doesn't include the scraping or the indentation that led into where that sticker was actually placed.
And then what type of bullet could make that kind of damage?
Check to expertise or knowledge foundation.
Can you lay more foundation of how he would be able to make that opinion?
What was your determination of what kind of bullet would make a hole that large?
I don't have any ammunition training or certifications to provide that answer accurately.
But from your own shooting experience, would you have thought that was a rifle or a handgun?
In my experience and training, again, I don't have it in trajectory or what particular bullets will do. What I do know is there's dozens of styles of bullets, whether it be a hollow point, full metal jacket, a frangible piece of ammunition. There's dozens of types of ammunition that are made, both of which can be utilized by a handgun or a rifle. The information I was provided, it at least seems that a rifle was the most reasonable weapon that was utilized to shoot at Mr. Boudreaux's car. But to give an answer for the type of ammunition, whether it be coming from a specific weapon, I cannot answer that.
Okay. And you're the case agent, is that correct?
Yes.
This is your investigation, is that correct?
Yes.
So did you not think it would be a good idea to do whatever kind of testing you could find out to find out what kind of gun this was?
There would be no way to find out what kind of gun this was.
There's no way to determine if it was a rifle versus a handgun?
No.
There's no way to determine whether it was taken from 30 feet or 10 feet?
No.
There's no way to determine if it was going up or going down?
No.
There's no way to determine if it was going left or it was going right?
There's evidence to show that it was going eastbound while the vehicle was traveling westbound.
Okay. You explained to us a little bit about what GSR was, right? So that's gunshot residue, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And can gunshot residue be transferred from person to person?
The particulates that come from gunshot residue, and I, to be fair, I'm not a gunshot residue expert, but from the particulates that come from there, is it possible for transfer to be made? I don't know.
Okay. So can gunshot residue be transferred from person's hand to, say, clothing? Like if you wiped your hands off?
I don't know.
So do you know what gunshot residue is made up of, what the three elements are?
I do not.
You do not?
I do not.
Are you aware that all three elements have to be present for it to actually be gunshot residue?
I'm going to object at this point to, again, this is outside his foundation. He's repeatedly said he's not a GSR expert.
He can answer if he knows.
I'll answer that I understand the collection of evidence, and I will acknowledge that I do not understand how to process the evidence in a lab. So I know when I'm collecting GSR, it's to collect... You mentioned three elements. I don't know how accurate that is, but I do know how to collect it, and I also do know where to submit it to be analyzed to confirm what elements are needed to confirm that a weapon was fired.
Okay. So having been a case agent hundreds of times.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sure you've dealt with lots of gunshots. Is that correct?
Not all cases were related to gunshots or homicides. But I have investigated other shootings and other violent crimes.
Have you ever swabbed someone's hands for gunshot residue?
Swabbed? No. Collected GSR? Yes.
From someone's hands?
Yes.
Because that's pretty typical, right? In a gun case where a gun has been fired?
Typical? I don't know if that's an appropriate word. Is it a tool or a evidence collection technique that can be utilized? Absolutely.
Okay. And so you're not aware that antimony, barium, and lead, all three have to be together for it to be gunshot residue?
I'm going to object again. There's an expert that will testify to this.
It's sustained. He said he doesn't know this.
Okay. You had testified earlier about being there with Tammy Lachick. Is that correct, when she collected the samples for GSR?
Yes, she and I traveled to Rexburg together, and then we were at the property building in Rexburg together, yes.
Okay, and how many people were there present at that time?
There was myself, CSI Lachick, Detective Olzak, Detective Hermosillo, and I believe one or two other individuals from the Rexburg Police Department.
And did she note the number of swabs that she took at that time?
I'm going to object as to foundation swabs of what?
Was she taking... Oh, sorry. I'll clarify if you want.
Go ahead.
Was she taking notes at the time when she was collecting those swabs?
Taking notes? No, but she was collecting the swabs and then again notating on the collection itself. So I guess if that's what you want to see as a note, then yes. But she didn't have a notebook with her where she was documenting everything.
She wasn't taking separate notes.
Thank you.
So the notes in her report are something she did possibly later?
Yes, I did not see her taking those notes, if you're referring to the images.
Okay. And then you flew up there together on a commercial airline?
No. Myself, Ms. Lachick, and Detective Olzak flew up there on a state, Arizona State government plane. So it was just the three of us and the two pilots on the flight.
So that's how you were able to go up and back at your leisure, kind of, in the same day?
In the same day, and this was a result of Detective Olzak at the time being a detective with the Department of Public Safety, DPS, they utilize a state plane that's typically used for the governor. They have a couple planes. And because they were assisting our agency with the processing of a vehicle involved in an attempted homicide, the Arizona Department of Public Safety allowed us to use one of their private planes to fly to and from Rexburg, Idaho, to process our Jeep.
Okay. And you flew into actual Rexburg at the little airport?
They have a small runway. That's correct.
And so you did not witness Ms. Lachick taking any separate notes besides what she wrote on the actual samples. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And do you remember what she was wearing that day, Ms. Lachick?
I do not remember what she was wearing, no.
Detective, are you familiar with the license plate readers?
I am familiar with LPR readers, but I'm not an expert in license plate readers.
And you work for the Gilbert Police Department, is that correct?
Yes.
And then how many license plate readers are there in the city of Gilbert? Do you know?
I don't. I can tell you that's changed a lot over time because the technology's gotten greater and they're smaller and easier to use. So to answer the question of how many in Gilbert, I have no idea. But at the time, I don't believe many. But that is speculating. I don't know about the LPRs in Gilbert.
And then would you, as the case agent in this case, have access to those Gilbert readers? Like, could you call them up and say, hey, I'm a Gilbert detective and I need license plate readers?
I wish it was that fancy. But the reality is what we do is we have crime analysts, civilians that are working with our police department who have access to LPR readers and to criminal histories and things of that nature. So in cases like this, I had our crime analysts assist with requests for LPR hits for the LWD0997 Texas plate.
And did you find any of those?
There were LPR hits, yes. There were multiple.
Where were they located?
The one that was presented was southbound in Holbrook on the I-40.
Have you been to Holbrook before?
Have I been to Holbrook
before? Arizona?
If I have been, it's only passing through. So I don't believe, I've never stopped in Holbrook, I guess I'd say that.
Do you know how far away it is from here? From, well, say Gilbert, Arizona?
I do not know how far Holbrook is from Gilbert, Arizona. I know it's north of us.
And so, I'm sorry, where were the other ones that you said there were several? You said one was in Holbrook?
One was in Holbrook. That's the one that's, I know, is presented. The other ones I do not have independent recollection of. They are documented in the police report.
So you don't have any documented in Gilbert, is that correct?
There were no LPR hits in Gilbert, I can tell you that.
None in Mesa?
None in Mesa.
None in Phoenix?
Not that I can recall.
None in Scottsdale?
None in Scottsdale.
None in Tempe?
None in local cities. They were all highway cameras that were involved in this.
So only Holbrook, Arizona, to your knowledge, and then Idaho?
Yes.
Is that correct?
There were some in Idaho as well, yes.
Okay. And do you have any idea, maybe you don't, but do you have any idea how long that they store that data? So like, as a detective, you go back and say, I need this, and they're like, well, we only have 30 days back or whatever.
I don't know their storage capacity or how long it lasts. And they are separate companies. Some are run by the government, some are run by private companies. So the retention period I am unaware of for these separate entities.
And who did you contact to find out about these LPRs? Who did you have to go to?
The crime analyst who contacted the respective agencies and private companies for who operate those.
So crime analysts within your department?
Yes.
Okay, do you know who that was that you went through?
Yes.
Can you tell us who that is?
Lori Orr.
Okay. So you call her and she calls them and they figure out the LPRs?
They provide her with the data. And it also, to go back to what you asked earlier, the retention period, they give it for every time this license plate is hit within their retention time. So there was multiple pieces of data that were returned for this license plate. Again, I don't know how the time frame was, but I was focused on the time around October 2nd of 2019.
And so in all of what you asked Lori Orr to get, you have this one in Holbrook, Arizona on October 1st. Is that correct?
That is correct. The one that has been...
And yes. Nothing in Gilbert?
Correct.
On October 2nd?
Correct.
Nothing in Gilbert on October 3rd?
I would object to asked and answered.
Overruled. I mean, technically you're right, but I'll let her recap. Go ahead.
Yes.
There were no LPR hits for that vehicle or that plate in the Phoenix metro area in the cities during that time frame.
Time frame meaning October 1st to October 3rd?
Yes, okay. Of 2019, yes.
You were mentioning before that you had contacted the FBI on the phone records of a tracking of a phone. Is that correct?
Yes, to the requested the assistance of the FBI with the phone cellular analysis.
And how do you request assistance of FBI? Talk me through that. How did that work? Who do you call?
So initially, on October 9th, myself, Detective McDermott with Gilbert Police met up with a couple detectives from the Chandler Police Department. This is where the images of the incident that happened in Chandler in earlier in the year in July, they were able to provide us pictures of the Jeep Wrangler with the Texas license plate. Further was learned on October 16th was when I received from our crime analyst the first image of the Jeep Wrangler driving southbound from Holbrook, presumably towards the Phoenix metro area, with that Texas license plate and without the wheel affixed to the back of that Jeep. It was at that time that I re-established communication with Chandler's police, and it was through our communication that it was decided to reach out to the FBI to further request their assistance.
So did you reach out to FBI personally, or did Chandler Police Department reach out to FBI personally?
It was a collective phone call, and then
okay.
The Chandler Police Department and then the Gilbert Police Department detectives, we went to the FBI field office in Phoenix, which is in far north Phoenix, at which time we made contact with federal agents there, FBI agents.
And so Nicholas Balance is the one who created a report concerning these phones, is that correct?
He was ultimately the one that we worked with the most, yes.
Did you talk to him initially, or did it get sent to him eventually?
He initially got assigned. Initially it was a sit-down meeting with some FBI agents and detectives, providing them the data we had for them to analyze. And then Nick Balance was assigned this case.
And you spoke to him specifically, directly?
I talked with him directly multiple times, yes.
Okay. And then do you have emails and phone calls and things with him, correct?
Multiple, yes.
And were those turned over to the defense?
As far as I know, I don't know.
So in his report on Bates pages 5482 to 5518, he created a report that said, did you get a copy of that report that he did, Nicholas Balance?
I'm not sure or familiar with which report you're referring to. Are you talking about the Gilbert Police report, or are you talking about a separate report from the FBI?
I'm talking about Nicholas Balance's report that, I guess, his PowerPoint.
Is it possible for me to see what you're looking at, and I can say yes or no? Because I have seen presentations, but I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
She has.
Do you want me to go to a specific page?
Yeah, so on page 15 of the report, it shows a purchase of a phone on 9/25/2019.
Okay.
If I'm correct.
on page 15, 9/25/2019 at, looks like 2110 hours. And I don't know if that's GMT or what time zone that's in, but.
Okay.
And for those of us
who are not military correct, it's about what time?
It would be 9:10 p.m. Again, I don't know if that's GMT. Most of the data that I've seen done with this cast is GMT, which is global. And then you have to subtract or add some hours depending upon your location on the globe.
As far as mountain time or central time or?
Yes, ma'am.
Pacific time. Okay. So on the top of the report there, it says 7:10 p.m., which is 2 hours prior to the sell. Is that correct?
I object to this person's foundation as to knowledge by this detective who did not create this report.
All right. The original question was if he was familiar with it or had seen it. So why don't we have that answered first?
Okay. Are you familiar with this report? Have you reviewed it for your testimony here today?
I have seen reports that look like this, and I have seen this particular page you're talking about. But I didn't draft it, and I don't want to give any incorrect information. So I'll do my best to answer what you want to ask me, but I don't work with CAST, and as much as I wish I was better with cell phone analysis personally, I'm not an expert in this area.
Okay. Well, just on that page particularly.
Hold on. Let's go sidebar. All right, you can resume your cross of this. And we'll go whatever you think as far as about another 5 minutes or so, and then we'll need to recess for the evening.
Detective Pillar, did you ever receive any information from Rich Robertson, the private detective Brandon Boudreau hired?
I did not.
Did you ever speak to him personally?
I think I may have had a phone call early on, essentially explaining that he was going to do a PI thing and but he understood that there's certain legalities when it comes to criminal investigation over a civil investigation.
When you say early on, when do you mean specifically?
I couldn't give you a date, but I believe I had a phone conversation with him. But it was not lengthy, and I don't remember communicating much after that, if at all.
So in October, just after October 2nd?
Yeah, it'd have to be after October 2nd, 2019.
And was it your understanding from that conversation that Brandon hired him to track Melanie?
I'm going to object, Your Honor.
Sustain.
What is the legal objection?
Calls for hearsay. It's not relevant, and it also could open the door to something you don't want it open to.
So you did not email with him or text with him, Rich Robertson?
No, not that I remember.
And he didn't send you any kind of information on the case?
No, not that I remember.
Okay. Did Brandon ever convey that he was frustrated with the way the investigation was going?
I can object to hearsay relevance.
Sustained.
Detective Pillar, can you tell me about when you arrived at the scene that day on October 2nd?
What would you like to know?
When you arrived, who was there and who did you speak to first?
When I arrived on scene, I parked east of the crime scene, the 3875 East Phelps. And the first individuals I remember talking with were my fellow detectives, Detective McDermott, Detective Biggs, and Detective Ferrer, determining what our roles would be. I cannot say for certain who I first spoke to as far as the officer, as far as a briefing goes, but I do know there were multiple officers on scene, to include Officer Rob, who was here earlier.
And someone briefed you, though, right? Do you know who that was?
I do not know who that was, but yes, somebody would have briefed us on that case.
And nobody remembers who briefed anybody?
It doesn't sound like it. And I would rather give you answers than say I don't know. But I don't know. I can't remember who gave me the briefing.
Well, it was Officer Rob, and who was the other officer that was with her when the first two on the scene? Officer Bullock?
Officer Brian Bullock was okay. The other officer that was on scene.
So would it have had to be Officer Rob or Officer Bullock who briefed the detectives when you arrived?
More likely than not, yes. It would have had to have been one or both of them collectively. But I do know that Officer Rob, being the first officer there and obtaining all the initial information, she's more likely than not the one who briefed us with the date, time, location, and involved persons.
Okay. So they briefed you, and then what happened after that?
After the briefing, again, I was decided that I was the primary case agent, the detective. Detective McDermott, Sergeant McDermott now, with running the scene. So he used the assistance of Detective Biggs and Detective Ferrer with evidence collection tasks while I introduced myself to the three males sitting across the street from 3875 and identified Brandon Boudreau. And then we went to my vehicle to have an interview with an air conditioning because it was a little warm outside.
Okay. And when was the house cleared? Someone had mentioned the house being cleared. Did that ever happen?
The house was cleared. That was prior to detective arrival.
Okay. So before you got there, that had already happened?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then you went and spoke to Brandon in your car, is that correct? And
yes,
did that interview?
Yes.
And you made an audio recording of that?
Yes.
And then someone transcribed it, is that correct?
We used a third-party transcription service at that time, so yes, that was transcribed.
And you heard Brandon's testimony that some of those things he thought were transcription errors?
Yes.
So did you go back in preparation for this testimony and listen to that audio recording of that interview?
I did not, yes, I did listen to the interview. No, I did not compare it to the transcript. It was Net Transcriptions, which was the company we used at the time. And there were errors at times, but I did not compare it to my interview with Brandon, if that's what you were getting at.
So there could be transcription problems in that interview.
It's possible.
But you didn't go back to check to see if there were. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And about how long did that interview last?
35, 40 minutes is an estimation.
Okay. And then where did you go next? You guys got out of the car, and what happened at that point?
Brandon returned to his friends, and I re-entered the crime scene to determine what my fellow detectives had discovered.
Were you aware that Brandon's friends, through the body cam, that they had been walking around in the crime scene?
It wasn't until watching it after, but once the crime scene was established, they didn't enter it again until we were done with what we needed to do, or at least we had our primary crime scene, which was the Tesla and the glass in that area. There was times where, I don't know if they were getting drinks or if there was times where they had to go inside of Brandon's home at the time.
Okay.
But that was allowed under some supervision.
And then, how long were you at the scene in total, do you think, that day?
From the start to the finish, and unless I had the CAD report or the police computer system to say when we arrive on scene and when we close off, I wouldn't know that accurately, but I know it was hours we were out there.
A few hours?
Yes.
And then how did that get wrapped up? I mean, if you're the case agent, how do you wrap it up, send everybody home? How does that work?
Well, like I was explaining earlier, extra detectives came out there. Once we finish with the canvas, the line search, we start letting people go from the scene and ultimately conclude our involvement, make sure that Mr. Boudreau and whoever else, maybe witnesses or people that were canvassed, have contact information for the detectives and just make sure we can maintain communication moving forward.
And you had mentioned that contact before. So you had said that you have a special phone for victims to contact you on. Is that correct?
Not just victims. It's my work cell phone, and I'm very open with giving that number. I have been since my start days in CID. Victims, offenders, witnesses, whomever wants my cell phone, they can contact me by text or call.
So you have that separate from your own personal cell phone?
Oh, yes.
And then you had mentioned Officer. That you had taken Brandon's cell phone. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how does that work? Talk me through that.
He completes a consent to search form, mm-hmm. which is a form that describes in detail what we're going to be doing with the device. In a layman's terms, we are making a digital copy of that, the software and all the content on that electronic device. So we turn it over to our digital forensics unit, which is detectives who specialize utilizing their hardware. And we made a copy of his smartphone from, and it's all the data on it. And we returned it to him as quickly as we could. I do not recall if it was the same night or the next day, but I know it was pretty soon after because that was his primary device to utilize.
Okay. And so what are the logistics of that? You're on the scene, you physically take the phone, you put it in an evidence bag. How does that work?
Yes.
And then how does it get transported to the forensic people?
I transport it. In this case, I believe it was, I can't remember which detective. It was either myself or McDermott. We worked on this case quite a bit in the beginning together, but ultimately brought the phone to our digital detectives.
So within that same day?
Yes.
Right? And it just gets turned over in the evidence bag and it's marked and all that?
It was never impounded. So although it's noted to be his and has his contact information in it, the point is to expedite the process. So instead of impounding it and then having to have it pulled out of evidence and then put back in so it could be ultimately returned to the owner, he gave us consent to take it, download it as quickly as possible, and then return it to him.
And then who would be the person who returned that to him physically, the phone?
I don't recall, but I know I turned it back over to him. I believe he came to the police department the next day or shortly thereafter, or even that night. Again, I don't recall, but I know it was turned over to him soon after by a detective.
So he could come pick it up, basically, is what you're saying?
Yes.
You didn't take it back to the house. He came and picked it up?
I believe so.
Okay.
Shall we break there for the evening?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Members of the jury, tomorrow, please be back and ready to start at 10:15 a.m. 10:15 a.m. Please remember the admonition. We'll be at recess for the evening.
All right, the jury.
Please be seated. The jury is no longer present. I told the jury 10:15. I'd like the parties here as close to a little bit after 10 as possible. I don't know if Judge Kemp, who's in here before doing his morning calendar, should be wrapping up by then, but just in case there are things we need to discuss prior to the jury coming in. Anything from the state at this point?
No, Your Honor.
All right, from the defense?
I right. mentioned just did have some child care issues. I should be able to get here by 10, but...
That's fine.
Okay.
The other advisory council will be here at 10.
I have two morning court matters, but hopefully we should be done.
Okay.
And just to go to the court's aware, I have early court on the 11th, so you know, obviously we're going to be stuck in there. So we're able to show what time we're starting on the 11th.
That's Friday?
I know. It's a couple days from now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong day. You have what on Wednesday?
I think it's just a CCMC.
Oh.
But sometimes you get stuck in courts and you can get out.
Right. I probably should start drafting up final instructions soon, I would think. So I'll try to get those maybe by tomorrow afternoon, and then I guess we'll go from there. All right, we'll get recessed for the evening.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.